but that's the old me. Shouting out of my window, drove down, 'cause I don't care anymore. Said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live on Saturday here on News Radio 92.3 or AM 1620, or you're listening to the podcast version of this show, which you can listen to anytime, anywhere, any place on the planet. If you want to listen at 12:37 a.m. on a Tuesday, you can do that. If you want to wait until 3 weeks after the show airs, sometimes people do that for some reason. We see you when you do that. You can absolutely do that. I don't want to be all big brothers watching you, but we do check the analytics on the podcast. So, if you're listening at a weird day, we notice that and like, oh, hey, people are still listening to that one 3 weeks later. Maybe we need, it's kind of how we decide what we're going to talk about on this show to some extent. You know, you're kind of tied to what's going on in the world and the news, but we do look at like what stuff gets more responses too. So if there's something we talk about on the show that you want us to talk about more, you know, listen to those podcasts, but also, you know, shoot us an email, drop a line to gopensacola@gmail.com. Let us know, hey, I like it when you talk about this. I don't like it when you talk about that. And, you know, that will influence where we go in the future of the show. It's hard because right now there's a lot of hard stuff going on in the world right now. It is a very dark time right now. And we try to stay on the light side with this show. So we're going to try to focus more on things that will take your mind off of all that stuff. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on this show, please welcome Jeremy Branch.
12:37 a.m. on Tuesdays is actually not a good time for me. So if you could either push it forward to 12:38 or 12:36 preferably, that would work better for my schedule. It's that one time.
What do you have going at 12:37 a.m. on a Tuesday?
So what happens is I actually set my alarm for 12:37 a.m. every Tuesday. I get up, I go into the living room, I stretch, I observe the position of the moon, and I decide whether or not to turn into a werewolf. So that's kind of my monthly routine. Sometimes, yes, the full moon happens to fall on the same time. Other times, it's just kind of a wasted effort, but at least I get to look out back, so that's always nice.
Are you out there? Should we be checking the news to see if there's a naked man stealing kids' balloons at 12:37 in the morning?
It's not me. If that's just somebody who looks strikingly like me. Thanks for having me on, man. I always enjoy this.
Let's be honest, it's Nick Flagstar.
Yes, that would be the first person I would check for. Absolutely.
Valid. Because people apparently don't have enough to worry about right now, and you know, I kind of alluded to this, there's a lot to worry about right now. But while, you know, maybe we should be focused on things that are going on in this country or even worldwide, you know, there's some, you know, everything's happening in the Middle East, everything's happening in California, you name it. Somehow, we also have time to be outraged that Sabrina Carpenter put out a vaguely naughty album cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a new thing with pop stars.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, because, you know, there's no history of pop stars ever doing anything vaguely naughty.
Mm-mm.
That's absolutely something that is brand new in 2025 and didn't exist, you know, throughout the entire history of pop music.
Sabrina Carpenter has released an album called Man's Best Friend.
Right.
The, as you mentioned and alluded to, the cover is causing a stir because it has her on her hands and knees, being held by her hair and the kind of looming presence of a man over her. I think this opens a door to a conversation you and I have had, and one that I think is a valid topic to discuss. And I don't think there's really a right or wrong side to come down onto it, but it harkens back to when we were discussing the film The Substance in satire, and has the broader society lost the plot and not able to discern satire? And if So that's one path is right. This is clearly satire. He listened to the words and the content of the album, and you know what her intentions are. And then B, the other side of that is indulging in those same tropes, permissible, even if it kind of still tailors to the male gaze, if it's done under the protection of satire.
Well, I mean, there's the question of, is this, first of all, there's a question of, is this satirical or not? Like, I think it's, yeah. I think it's at least a little bit tongue in cheek, but I also think that this has been like, we're to like year three, I guess, of Sabrina Carpenter being somebody that's very well known. She's been around for longer than that. She actually, that album the 2 years ago or last came out that everybody's like, oh, this new artist, Sabrina Carpenter with Espresso and all the big hits off of that. She'd actually been around before that, four albums before that, that just didn't do very well. She'd been a Disney Channel star. She was on Girl Meets World and, you know, that kind of stuff. So she's like the comparable here is probably Miley Cyrus. Although Miley Cyrus was kind of a hit maker from the start. Sabrina's been around for a little while, even though she's pretty young. But since like Espresso and I don't know why all the other songs on that album are just going out of my head, right? Taste is one, yeah. And there's another one that I'm forgetting in there that was another big hit that's just in my head right now. But she's part of her persona, at least on these two albums, has been very much owning and celebrating her sexuality. And I don't think that's necessarily satirical. I think it's an empowerment thing. And I don't know if this continues that, if it's satirical, because the implication that some people read into this album cover is her being kind of, if this is kind of a, and I'm tiptoeing around how we talk about this on FCC covered radio station, but
it's a four-letter acronym, right?
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I guess that's fair. Or you know, there's a dominant and a submissive aspect to this. I think that's a fair way to say it. But is she setting herself up as submissive? And is that necessarily a bad thing if that's what she wants to be? You know, it's there's a lot of like small p politics going on here. Like politics of gender roles, politics of relationship dynamics, politics of sexuality, not politics of like, oh, well, I don't like the president. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, though, what she does very well is capture the conversation and the zeitgeist. I think it was intentional and it can easily be played both ways, right? Like she can use the defense of, hey, it's satire. And then also, that feminism isn't like a, from what I understand, like a one size fits all uniform thing across all aspects of femininity. So like, I think she's, as an artist, should be able to, you know, express herself however she wants to. And then on the flip side of that, as a social media user, like whatever your morals are and your principles are, if you want to express that, that's great. And I also think it feeds into the algorithm and her ultimate goal, which is to capture headlines, which she's done really well. So kudos to her for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely intentionally provocative. And there's a rumor floating around that there was an even crazier cover that they wanted to do that the label didn't let her do, although I haven't been able to find any real evidence of that.
I'll be searching later on.
Yeah, I did some searching on this last at 12:37 a.m. Jeremy, I don't think I want to know what you do at 12:37 a.m. I'm kind of sorry I asked. But... Yeah, I mean, it's intentionally provocative. But yeah, I mean, you can go back and look at the antecedents to this. You know, I sarcastically said, oh, this has never happened before. But I mean, you know, Madonna, obviously. But Madonna wasn't the first to do that kind of thing either. You know, it's...
Freaking 40 years ago or whatever it was. It's such a history of pop stars hitting that note and it causing some sort of moral... outrage on one side and then defense on the other.
Goes back to only shooting Elvis from the waist up. You know, I mean, there is a long history of this. We got to take a break. We're going to be back with more in just a moment. Listen, Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Doctor Who, hey! The TARDIS, Doctor Who!
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line. And Jeremy, I wanted to spend some time talking about Doctor Who because we've just had the season finale of season two of the new era of Doctor Who, which is that's a long story, which we'll get into in just a moment. But there's a lot of speculation both about what's going on in universe and what's going on in the larger world of, you know, the real world of what's happening with Doctor Who. And I kind of wanted to talk to you about this because I know you don't watch regularly. And
so you said the new relaunch, which was the Disney Plus thing, and I watched the first trilogy of that kind of at your recommendation, and I enjoyed it. And then I also watched the new reiteration, the season or series one, which was the Eccleston one.
Okay.
So casual fan, as you said, and I was just kind of illustrating that this isn't something that I've got a long history with. I don't know a whole lot about it. But I did really enjoy those ones that we watched. It was like three special episodes. I feel like they were only like 30 minutes each. They might have been up to an hour.
Yeah, they were close to an hour.
But it was kind of turning over or passing the torch along to this most recent Doctor.
So that's kind of where I wanted to start, because I was having a conversation with some friends of mine last night who are Doctor Who or have been Doctor Who fans but have kind of tuned out. And they were making the argument that at this point, after more than 60 years, there's just too much lore and there's too much stuff, and it's preventing them from enjoying it. And they're people that at least know a good portion of it. So is that something that, like, because you have not made the leap from being a casual fan to like watching every episode, what do you feel like is keeping you from getting over the hump there?
So for me, it simply comes down to volumes of material to watch. And I'm not even just talking about Doctor Who. And I think this is something that, is going to inevitably come up, whether it's us talking about this or maybe talking about some other franchise that both of us know are good. We would love to dedicate the time to watching them, but just simply have something else to watch at the time.
Right.
I get the appeal of Doctor Who, and one thing that I felt relatively early on is that it does a pretty good job of, like, I didn't feel lost. I didn't feel like I was trying to penetrate some impenetrable wall of lore that was keeping me from enjoying it. I took it at face value, thought it was a lot of fun, didn't think that maybe some of the nuances that I was missing was really detracting from the experience. That said, if I did know all of that lore, maybe I would be moved by it more. But, like, I get the appeal of it. I think it's, like, kitschy and kind of cheesy in a good way, and I like the casts in all that I've seen, and the kind of the dynamic between the Doctor and the companion is a kind of cool thing to explore. So, like, I get it. I understand why people like it. It wasn't something that, like, really, really moved me. And maybe that is from a lack of experience. But yeah, I don't know. I think that's an interesting perspective. How do you feel about too much lore?
See, I disagree. I think that there's as much of it as you want to get into, but the fact of the matter is that 61, 62 years after the show debuted, there are very few people that are alive and watching the show that have seen every single episode. And I can say that with confidence,
right?
Because unless you are British and were a small child when the show started, either you've passed away or you came into the show later. And the reason I can say with great confidence that there's nobody that's gone back and sat down and watched every episode is because there are whole episodes and whole serials from the first two Doctors that have just vanished.
Right.
That copies of are not known to exist. That because the way things were done in the early days of television, they didn't record stuff. So unless they're, once it aired, if they decided they were going to wipe the tapes because they wanted to put something else on it, that's gone. And they didn't know that there was going to be an audience for a library.
Right.
Basically. So there are several episodes of the First and Second Doctors that are just flat out don't exist right now. We know of the stories, we know there's scripts, there's still photography, but the completed episodes are just gone. And every once in a while they discover, oh, we found one at this, TV station in South Africa. And, there's very little hope of ever recovering every episode. So there is nobody that's seen everything, or very, very few people that have seen everything. It's just not possible.
Let me ask you this in terms of lore.
Sure.
When you look at a series like X-Files, you got your Monster of the Week episodes, you've got your overarching narrative. Some television series, they kind of approach each series/season in America to kind of its own story arc. And obviously there's always going to be things that carry over, but structurally speaking, is every series/season kind of a new show, or is it very, very contingent on the previous episodes?
I think that every new Doctor is a new show.
Okay.
For lack of a
better term. That makes sense.
Some of the basics are still there. You still have, the Doctor, he travels with a companion, he's a Time Lord, he travels in the TARDIS, that sort of things. But the personality of the character changes and the tone of the show changes. And I think that overall, above and beyond that, within the course of an individual Doctor's span on the as the Doctor, the tone can change from season to season, and the overall story arc, because there is an overall story arc to most Doctors each season, at least since the series came back in 2005, then there's a new storyline each season, whether the companion carries over or not, et cetera. There might be, like you said, Monster of the Week episodes and other episodes that go to the overall story arc. But yeah, and I think that given that, it is something that you can pick up. Now, are there places that are better to pick up than others? Sure. But I consider myself a major Doctor Who fan that knows a lot of the lore, and I haven't seen anywhere close to everything. I came in as a kid in like the Fifth Doctor's era, and but I haven't seen every episode even of the Fifth Doctor. I've seen smatterings of the first seven Doctors, serials here and there, but I haven't seen every serial for every Doctor. I've seen everything that the Eighth Doctor did, because he only did a movie and then a short like a couple of decades later. And then I've seen everything from 2005 on, all the stuff with the new Doctors. But I haven't seen everything, but I've seen enough to go on. And it's one of those things that I think you pick it up as you go along. And I feel the same way about it's a criticism that gets thrown at comic books too. But when I started reading comic books when I was a kid, certainly Superman had been around for close to 40 years already. Batman had been around for close to 40 years already. Spider-Man had been around for, a decade at least, maybe more. I think closer to 20 years. I didn't have a problem getting into those characters and eventually learning about them and learning a bunch of the lore and reading older stuff and things like that. And I still haven't read every single Superman comic that's out there, or every single Spider-Man comic that's out there, every single X-Men comic. But I know enough that I can follow along and, pick up the story in where I pick it up and follow it.
Let's stick on this for a second, because I just had a thought about this. And as somebody who did collect comic books, I totally hear where you're coming from. With Doctor Who, it's like you're getting, let's just say, the beginning of each season is at issue one of this thing, and you follow it along through the main line of this character's comic book. It's a Doctor Who comic book or whatever. Where it gets a little more convoluted, and I'm going to level accusations at Disney's Marvel and Star Wars properties in regard to lore, and kind of tie it to where comic books were at in the 1990s with like crossover events like Executioner's Song or whatever, where now all of a sudden your path is branching off and deviating into different directions. And in order to really be locked into storyline A, you've got to start collecting comic book B and C over here and trying to tie it all together. And I think that actually in part probably caused some issues with Marvel in the 1990s. But I say that to say, like, with Doctor Who, you're kind of following it down one path, so the lore doesn't get so hard to parse, where with Marvel movies, now you have to watch the TV shows, and you got to watch the animated shows, and you got to watch the movies. I could see how one would be more complicated than the other.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly have been some spinoffs here and there over the years.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Some of which are more vital than others, but not a lot. Not anywhere near to the extent that you're talking about. Not, you know.
Was it Deadwood? What was it called? Deadwood?
Torchwood.
Oh, yeah, Torchwood. Okay.
Yeah. There was Torchwood. There was the Sarah Jane Adventures. There was a show called Class, which I still haven't watched. So that was like very, very tangential. We do have one coming out later this year called The War Between the Land and the Sea that is a spinoff. And they're getting ready to spin off a children's animated series, a preschool animated series as well. Let's talk a little bit more about this when we come back, because we haven't gotten into the meat of one I want to discuss yet. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch on the line, and we are talking about Doctor Who and everything that's going on with Doctor Who right now. So the reason, Jeremy, I kind of wanted to lead into talking about like why people sometimes seem to have trouble getting into the show or are trepidatious about getting into the show, or why they don't jump from being a casual to being, you know, heavily into it, is because it kind of weighs on what's going on right now, in that we just ended the second season of the Disney Plus era of the show. And we don't know what's happening next. We don't know if or when there's going to be more Doctor Who right now. Everything's been kind of on hold because the Disney Plus deal was for 2 seasons and then to decide whether they wanted to do more or not. And before season 2 even aired, Disney basically said, we're not making any decisions until after season 2 airs. Well, season 2 has aired now. We don't have a decision. Nobody's saying anything. And the wide speculation is that Disney's going to bow out of the deal, which doesn't mean that Doctor Who is necessarily over, because the BBC still wholly owns Doctor Who. They can go back to producing it themselves. Yeah, you know, they can cut the budget back to what it was before and make it for less money and find some other partner to release it in the US, or maybe put it back on BBC America, where it aired for quite some time. You know, there are options there. We're going to see something eventually, but right now we don't know what, and we don't know when. So, like, that's why I'm curious as to what it takes, because we just had these 2 series with Shuti Gatwa, who is a very talented actor playing the Doctor, and who is somebody who is widely seen as like this breakout star. You know, mm-hmm. he was in Sex Education, which was very popular on both sides of the pond. He was one of the Kens in Barbie. He's getting ready to be in a bunch more stuff, and that's kind of what happened here. The reason he's now left the show, because it was planned for him to do more than two seasons, is because he's been in limbo for a year. And this is a guy who's got people coming at him with offers left and right. And for the good of his career, he can't just sit on his butt and say, well, I can't do anything else. I know what's going to happen with Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So for the good of his career, he had to make the decision, okay, I'm gonna leave the show here. And it's pretty well known that they actually had to do reshoots on the final episode of the season to make it his final episode and to have him regenerate. And that maybe led to the final episode having some mixed returns on it that maybe it wouldn't have had otherwise. But they came up with, I think, a hell of a cliffhanger to get people interested in coming back in that. And this is a bit of a spoiler. If you are a Doctor Who fan, you haven't seen the last couple of episodes yet, just be forewarned that there are spoilers here. And I guess I already gave you a bit of a spoiler in that, you know, telling you that Shuti Gatwa's end has come. But I don't know how you can live in 2025 and be on the internet and not already know that, because it's been a couple weeks already. At the end of the episode, when he regenerated, we don't know exactly what happens, but when the new face appeared, it was a very familiar face to Doctor Who fans. It was the face of Billy Piper, who, of course, was Rose, the companion of the Ninth Doctor, and stayed on with the Tenth Doctor, and is somebody that has showed up throughout the new history of the show, 2005 on, is an actor that has, you know, very much been beloved and very much has been well received. But we don't know for sure if she's the Doctor or not, because typically what they've done at the end of every episode is when it's a regeneration episode and the credits come up, it says, and introducing so-and-so as the Doctor. And in this case, it just said, and introducing Billy Piper. It didn't say, and introducing Billy Piper as the Doctor. So we don't
know. Has there ever been a regeneration where it wasn't the Doctor?
Sort of. But there are a couple of different things they could be playing with here. And the fact of the matter is, we don't really know what's going on yet. And part of the question is, because we don't know when or where we're going to get more Doctor Who yet.
Yes.
So there's a couple of different theories as to what could be happening with Billy Piper. She could be the next Doctor. You said you watched the first season with Christopher Eccleston, so you've seen this actress before.
Yeah, I recognized her name. I pulled her up to make sure, but yeah, one I am familiar with.
Yeah, so you may remember at the end of that season, she had to look into the heart of the TARDIS and she was basically going to explode and then the Doctor saved her.
Uh-huh.
But so there may be something where there's some part of her that's in the heart of the TARDIS. And that may be what's going on here. There's also the possibility of something that happened later where there was a thing called the Bad Wolf that took her face. And it could be something to do with that. So there's a number of different options that could be going on here. And I think it does bring a lot of excitement to the fandom, although there's also the perspective of, oh, this is just nostalgia baiting. They don't know what to do. They're just desperately trying to get people to watch again. Which, is that a factor? Probably.
Well, I mean, but the goal of every TV show is to be watched.
Yeah. But if it's done well and done creatively, then, you know, awesome. I think that what was done with David Tennant coming back as the 14th Doctor was well done, and it was interesting and well played. But I don't know if this was done to try to entice somebody to say, oh yeah, we've got to air, people are going to want to watch that, so we're going to, either Disney's going to take
Greenlight
it back up, or some other streaming service is going to say, oh well, we want a piece of that. Or, you know, if it was done for real story reasons and he's got a great story here. There's a lot of question marks. So as somebody who did watch before and has been a casual, does the idea that Billy Piper is coming back and not knowing what capacity she's coming back in, is that something that gets you interested?
I mean, yeah, it absolutely gets me interested. More in the real world questions, and it, to kind of echo what you said, was this done out of necessity for what the story, where the direction that the story is going, or was this done as kind of a Hail Mary in hopes of, hey, we've got this beloved character that people like from the series. It's generating buzz. Now, potentially, maybe somebody else will pick it up. As far as would it make me watch the series? I mean, no, I don't know what it would take, but that in itself isn't something that, like, is going to activate me to become a fan. The other thing that it has me interested in, and this is kind of, I guess, the ultimate question is there a ideal home for Doctor Who? Is there, like, what is your kind of best case scenario coming out of this?
I mean, Doctor Who is British.
Uh-huh.
You know, the BBC being in control of it and using British creatives on that, I think, is intrinsic to what it is and its appeal. In the same way that James Bond should always be. And I know there's been exceptions to this because I know George Lazenby was Australian and I know Connery was Scottish, but, you know, it's UK. Let's say the UK based. I think that it should continue to be UK based. I have seen some people suggest that maybe if they made the show more international and maybe brought in an American companion or something like that, maybe that would be something that would create a broader audience. I don't know that that's necessarily true. As to where it ended up with as a US partner or a worldwide partner, I don't have strong feelings about that. I just want it to be somebody who's going to say, okay, we know that this is something that we can invest in and it's going to last, and that there's a library here that people will revisit, and somebody that's going to put all that library under one roof, because right now it's not. Right now, the 2005 through 23 episodes or whatever it is are all on HBO Max, and then the newer stuff's on Disney. That needs to get resolved.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, the HBO Max deal is actually coming to a close as well. So we are at a point where theoretically, if Disney's willing to sell off what they produced, unless Disney's going to buy it all, it could theoretically be back under one roof, which I think would be strong. And if that were to happen, then I think maybe Amazon. I don't think Netflix.
Yeah.
I don't think Netflix. But I think maybe Amazon would make some sense.
Because Doctor Who does have such a dedicated following, and I can't imagine it having to cost a whole lot to produce episodes, and this is just me kind of pulling from the little bit of context that I have with a series like Taskmaster, which is another popular British show. They put all their episodes on YouTube, and, I mean, they get like 4 or 5 million views per full episode, so like, I wonder if there's a world where, like, maybe they just were to distribute it there, everybody could watch it, but it would keep the fandom alive. I don't know. That was just something I was kind of working out in my head as we were talking about it.
Well, let's talk about that a little more when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Just standing there, and I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I kissed you then, and then once again.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line. And man, I said it before, I'll say it again. This is a slight divergence from what we're talking about here. Music video in the 80s was wild.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just the imagery is so iconic, but it also sometimes at the same time just says nothing. I hadn't seen that video for Dr. Doctor by the Thompson Twins in for freaking ever. And it's like everything just looks so cool in it, but it's just there. Like there's no real like storyline or theme or anything to it. It's just, you know, hey, here's some cool stuff.
Serious synthwave aesthetics. Like,
yeah.
Fundamental synthwave aesthetics.
Yeah. And it's interesting you should mention that too, because we've been talking about Doctor Who. We're going to continue talking about Doctor Who. But I just watched a video essay on there's a channel called Trash Theory that does these amazing in-depth music analysis pieces. And it was this hour-long piece about how synth pop became synth pop. And like everything that led up to like the early 80s and the flood of what came, you know, basically starting with like Gary Numan and like that kind of stuff. But everything that was like the prehistory of that. And basically it was the prehistory of electronic music, the prehistory of using electronics to make music. And one of the things it cited as an absolutely like one of the prototypical uses of electronics to make music, and something that became massively influential upon electronic music, is the theme song to Doctor Who.
Ah, interesting.
Which, you know, again, we're going back 60 years, so we're talking about this starting in the early 60s. You know, 20 years before what we consider like the real flood of electronic music, and certainly, you know, before synth pop, you can trace that to, among other things, the Doctor Who theme. And that's partly why a lot of this stuff comes out of the UK.
Because I will definitely be watching that. I just added it to my watch later list. Yeah, it's called Before Gary Numan, How Synth Pop Became Synth Pop. And that sounds really interesting and a cool way to tie the conversation together, because yeah, that theme has virtually remained unchanged the whole time, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there's been different arrangements of it and such over the years, but you know, it is, you know, they're basically still using the same theme that they started with in 1963, if I'm remembering my years correctly.
It's a good theme.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of the other, one of the many ways in this show has been hugely influential and hugely iconic, and that's why I think that no matter what, this is not, there are many reasons I think Doctor Who's not going away. No matter what happens with Disney Plus, whether they find another US partner or what, Doctor Who's not going anywhere. There's that. I mean, and Doctor Who has gone away before. There was a long hiatus from basically 89 to 2005 that was split up by one or two little things that they tried to do in between there. But the show was off the air for a number of years. I don't think we're ever going to have that long a hiatus again because of the influence, because the show has become iconic, because it does have a worldwide audience now that it didn't have even in the 80s. I mean, those of us who got into Doctor Who in the 80s that are American got into it on PBS.
I was going to ask where you saw it first. Yeah. So it was on PBS when you were young.
A lot of PBS channels, a lot of local PBS channels picked it up. It wasn't on nationally. It was, you know, kind of like a lot of other stuff. If you think about things like everything from like Monty Python's Flying Circus to a lot of the very popular British sitcoms like Are You Being Served and Keeping Up Appearances and Fawlty Towers and, you know, things like that. The way Americans got those was on PBS, which meant that it wasn't on broadcast network. It didn't have as large an audience and it was very niche. Doctor Who in particular tended to air like on weekends, like later in the evening. So, you know, it was kind of just the nerds that found it first. But in the UK, it was a hit from the start, and it was directed mainly at kids at first, and people grew up with it, and it's this iconic thing. It didn't really become iconic in the States until the 2005 revival, and that's when it
finally... I was going to ask, in that time prior to 2005, was the... Because you have your finger on the pulse of conventions, was there a audience for Doctor Who, or was the fandom kind of showing out prior to that, or was that kind of the birth of the American convention presence?
No, there was, but it was more niche. There were Doctor Who conventions in the States, but it was smaller.
Okay.
And a lot of times it was sponsored by, you know, the local PBS station would bring in one of the doctors and, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, they existed in the 80s. In fact, weirdly enough, Patrick Troughton, the second doctor, actually, when he passed away at a U.S. convention.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, and again, a lot of these actors have done a lot of other stuff too. You know, if nothing else, if you never saw Patrick Troughton as the doctor, you probably saw him in The Omen. You know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of these guys have to varying levels of success done other stuff. Obviously, again, the newer doctors have not been quite as hemmed in by that role as maybe some of the doctors that came up in the 70s and 80s, or 60s for that matter. But they've all done other stuff. And, you know, even, you know, somebody like Sylvester McCoy, who was the last doctor in the 80s, was in The Hobbit as Radagast. You know, they've all had, you know, significant other stuff they've done over the years. I think that we're about to see Shuddi Gatwa maybe have the biggest career of any past doctor, because he's already such an in-demand actor. And I mean, that's saying something when you think about Matt Smith and what he's done since leaving Doctor Who, and, you know, House of the Dragon, and, you know, been in a number of movies.
Morbius.
For some reason they keep trying to put him in these U.S. franchises that don't take off. Cause, you know, he was in Terminator Genesis too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's less said about that, the better. But I think that's where we're going with Shuddi Gatwa. Now, you asked me a question before the break, and if you remember what that was, now I'm going to ask you to reiterate it.
Yeah, it was basically, I guess the kind of nuts and bolts, like how much of the revenue from Doctor Who is actually revenue made by it. I guess that's a dumb way to frame it, but because there's no way that you could make money off putting it on YouTube other than monetizing the views and the ads that run there, there would be no big deal that was signed to air it on YouTube. But is there a way to just kind of keep it alive so that the merchandise and all of that stuff can continue to sell?
Yeah, see, that's the other reason that the BBC is not going to let it die, no matter how expensive it is to make Doctor Who. And it is, you know, it's a sci-fi show, so there's an effects budget and things like that. It makes so much money for them in merchandise.
Yes.
Like, it is such a revenue generator that it's not going away. It's, you know, even if they don't have a streaming partner in the U.S., do I think they'll put it on YouTube? No. I think if it comes down to it, like the path of last resort on this is probably something like either a combination of going back to BBC America for broadcast and going to a service like a niche service like BritBox, which if you're not familiar with BritBox is a streaming service that's available here in the US that streams a lot of UK television and I think some movies too, but largely UK television. And you could subscribe to it independently, or you can have it as an add-on to Amazon or, you know, some of the other services. So, you know, I think that's an avenue. Do I think that's where they're going to end up with this? No, because I think it's still too big a brand that somebody won't take a swing at it. If it's not, I said before that I think Amazon seems like the most likely suitor to me, but if it's not Amazon, you know, maybe it's Paramount Plus, maybe it's Peacock, maybe it's, you know, there's a number of other services that are out there that it could be on that are more high profile than BritBox is. But you know, if it comes down to it. Or, you know, maybe BBC decides they're going to expand their service to start being available in the U.S. because they do have a streaming service. It's called iPlayer. Right now, that's only available in the U.K. But perhaps they expand iPlayer to be available internationally. You know, that's entirely a possibility as well. I think that right now we're not hearing anything because they still have one more series that they're obligated to release, that being The War Between the Land and the Sea, which is, I think, going to be very interesting because it's UNIT, which is like this paramilitary organization that deals with extraterrestrial threats in the Doctor Who universe on Earth, versus a classic Doctor Who enemy in the Sea Devils. So we're going to see that come out later this year. And maybe, you know, maybe if that does well, maybe that changes things too. But we'll see what happens in the future. We don't have a TARDIS, so we'll have to wait. But we'll be back next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.